Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Money and Markets on the Solaria Report with John Titus and Catherine Austin Fitz. As you can tell from looking at John's backdrop, you're probably up in the North Pole with the elves helping. Is that where you are?
The CIA safe house is at an undisclosed location. Yep. It doesn't move. It's not mobile.
It's amazing. It's the perfect look. A couple announcements before we dive in. We've got a lot to talk about. I wanted to mention our holiday greeting is now up on the Solaria Report. There's a banner right on the upper right side of the website. And we describe all the offerings during the holiday season. One is Give the Gift. Don't forget, every subscriber has the opportunity to give a complimentary subscription to the person of their choice. And we hope that it helps you with your giving budget. We have Best of Solaria Reports all month, and there are only two Money in Markets. We only do two Money in Markets in December, and thanks to John, instead of doing them in the first 2 weeks, we're doing them in the first and third. So there'll be no Money in Markets in Ask Catherine next week, but there will be the following week, and then we disappear for the holidays while we prepare the annual wrap-up. John is writing the theme on sovereignty. It's going to be a big one, and we're excited about that. We also have a delicious treat that I haven't seen, and I cannot wait. We have a new video. So why don't you describe, John, your new video, which we'll be posting up at Best Evidence on Thursday when we publish Money in Markets.
Well, we do not have a new video yet. We have a video that's been recorded, and I have to just go and edit it. But I do have a thumbnail for the video that I'm going to show you later because I haven't shown it to you yet. I debated about sending it to you last night. I was like, no, I'll just show it to her. So you get to see the thumbnail.
He knows I'm just waiting for this.
Yeah. So the new video is called Sticky Fingered Fed Fanatic is the Wrong Kind of Bank Boss. And it's...
You got to say that again.
The video is called... It's been referring to Sala Omarova, who's been nominated by Joe Biden to head the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, the OCC, the oldest banking regulatory agency in the U.S. And the video is called Sticky Fingered Fed Fanatic is the Wrong Kind of Bank Boss. And I'll explain that when we get into it.
I would like to point out, though, that on Money and Markets, you called her Sticky Fingers because she has an arrest record for shoplifting as an adult.
Indeed.
And so one of our team put it out on social media, hashtag Sticky Fingers Omarova, and it caught on.
Wow.
So another John Titus-ism hits the viral.
Well, the video actually goes into the arrest report in some detail, which has some certain parallels to some things she's written that are rather curious and that I talk about in the video. But anyway, there's a story in this week's FedWatch. It's the last story in FedWatch that talks a little bit about Omarova. And there I will reveal the thumbnail, even though the video may be up by the time Money Markets get posted. But anyway, you get to see it.
Okay.
I get to see your reaction to it.
I absolutely want to encourage everyone here. I wrote a letter to one of my senators is on the banking committee, which approves. I wrote a letter to him. Several subscribers have written letters. Please write letters. You don't say it can't get worse. If she's the banking regulator, it's going to get much worse.
Right. And I'll say up front that it's not, she has to get approved by the Senate, and it's not just the banking committee that has to approve her. It's the full Senate. So even if your senator, neither one of your senators is on the banking committee, get a hold of them both because their votes count. We have to stop her nomination. This is a disaster.
Right. This woman, I believe she's a sociopath and very, very dangerous.
But she has no she has no organizational experience. She has some very deep-seated problems with honesty, in my opinion. And that's just absolutely the wrong person who's going to be taken advantage of by the wolves at the New York Fed.
Well, we also know she's written and published an article in the Vanderbilt Law Review proposing a CBD system, which proves my point that it's a slavery system.
Yeah. Well, it's, I get into all that article extensively in the new video. The video is going to be about 55 minutes from what I can tell.
Wow.
But it takes me a while to edit because I'm doing what's called a multicam edit. I'm new to that, so I'm going to try to get the edit done today. Traveling tomorrow. Anyway, the video's coming soon. It'll be out this week, one way or the
I
other.
know how busy you are, and the fact that you took time to do this is, we're all deeply grateful.
Well, it was quite a bit of fun too, I must admit. Anyway.
Yeah, there's nothing like the perfect target.
Wow. Well, I had done in video earlier where I just, for whatever reason, reached beyond the four corners of a previous Law Review article and said, I think Omarova's on the up and up. And I don't know why I did that. I'm looking back like, why did you do that? Now you have to kind of explain. Anyway.
Anyway, we live and learn. It's a learning process.
Yes.
So we go. Okay, let's dive in. Farmageddon.
Farmageddon, here we go. The first story is from Latvia. Latvia bans unvaxxed politicians from voting and suspends pay. So they're serious in Latvia. Sort of the story really explains itself. As Euronews reports, Latvian members of parliament, MPs who have not been vaccinated or recovered from COVID-19 will have their pay suspended and no longer be able to take part in parliamentary votes. MPs approved the measure in a vote on Friday with 62 votes in favor in the 100-seat parliament. The measure, interestingly enough, also applies, zoom in on this, to local government lawmakers and will come into force as the country exits its latest one-month lockdown. That's interesting. It's not just parliament, it's really countrywide. And this is.
Yeah, so it's a clever way of completely destroying any constitutional law or the legal process or the governance process. It's basically, I mean, it's sort of coup by health ministers.
Yeah, I don't know how the constitutional system or whether there's a constitutional system set up in Latvia. In the US, that's why we have a constitution, is to prevent, a populace getting wild and out of control. The constitution is a check on that. Whether that applies in Latvia, I don't know.
Right.
But it's interesting
Right, but
to cut back to the article quickly. This is, let me zoom in on this. A country where half of the population remains unvaccinated. There you go. How about that?
right.
So, I mean, this is
Right.
being passed regardless of what people want. Well,
Right.
so
Right, it's top down. It's top
very
down.
much so. Very much so. Okay. Keep it going. Let's go to our next story. This is from, I think it's Denis Rancourt, but I don't, it looks like a French name, but Dennis.
Oh,
Let's
Dennis. Yeah, it's Dennis
call him
Rancourt.
Dennis.
Brilliant,
Okay.
brilliant, amazing
Dennis
scientist.
is easier for me to handle. Okay, Dennis writes an article, The Nature of COVID Era Public Health Disaster in the USA, from All-Cause Mortality and Socio-Geoeconomic and Climate Data. So he really does a deep dive here. Let me see if I can zoom in and keep it all on the page. Yes. He investigates why the USA, unlike Canada and Western Europe countries, has a sustained exceedingly large mortality in the COVID era, occurring from March 2020 to the present. The behavior of the USA all-cause mortality by time, by age group, by sex, and by state is contrary to pandemic behavior caused by a new respiratory disease virus for which there is no prior natural immunity. He says its seasonal structure, it's max out in the summer, its age group distribution hits the young, and statewide heterogeneity are unprecedented and opposite to viral respiratory disease behavior. We concluded that a pandemic did not occur, and we infer that a persistent chronic psychological stress induced by long-lasting government-imposed, basically lockdowns, are to blame here. And you could see, I just want to scroll down. I can't highlight any of this, but you can see from the table of contents here, this is a major piece of work.
Oh, it's major.
150 pages long, something like 40 figures, I think, were in this thing. Anyway, it's a major piece of work. The statewide head,
So he w Go
he,
ahead.
the
You go
statewide
ahead.
heterogeneity, that's a major tell, he's saying. He says, a virus really doesn't abide by state lines, and yet we see this health data that seems to track political affiliations, curiously enough, which is a surefire tell. It's not really a virus at work, it's really politics at work.
Right. Dennis was a brilliant physicist, and then when the COVID-19 started, decided to, okay, I'm going to use my scientific skills to unpack what's really going on here. And he's really thrown himself into the statistics, and it's amazing what he has figured out and uncovered. And we got a presentation on this on one of the calls I'm on, and it was, it's pretty irrefutable. There was no pandemic, but there was basically a genocide of people, primarily with economic and sort of media means by the government.
Right, New York, the nursing homes leaps to mind.
Right.
Yeah,
Right.
undoubtedly more people died, but it most certainly was not from any sort of virus. They were stuffed in them,
Right.
basically stuffed in a death homes, for lack of a better
Right.
term. Yeah,
Right.
but anyway, a lot of people who've done deep dives come to the same conclusion, which is no pandemic.
Right.
That's what I call the spreadsheet disease. We just recategorize one to another and call it something new, scare you. Okay, keep it going. Next one's from the FDA, Freedom of Information Act request. This is from Reuters, by the way. See that? The title says it all. Wait, what? FDA wants 55 years to process FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request, over vaccine data. A group of scientists asked the federal government to share the data it relied on in licensing Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine. And the response went well beyond typical bureaucratic foot dragging, 55 years beyond. That's how long the FDA and court papers, and I've got court papers, there's a footnote there, this week proposes it should be given to review and release the trove of vaccine-related court documents. Okay, the court being involved, when you submit a FOIA request like I did, I submitted one to the Fed, they actually responded and they produced some documents and I looked at them. I don't think they're complete, but I'm not going to challenge them. When somebody comes back, if you're not satisfied with the response or they just out and out stonewall you, your remedy is to file a case in federal district court. And that's evidently what's happened here. That's why we're seeing a reference to court papers. And so the court, this is being litigated in court now. And so under the law, the 1967 FOIA law requires federal agencies to produce or respond to the information request within 20 business days. And the DOJ gets involved and says, wait a minute, we've got 329,000 pages of stuff to produce. We can't do that. And we have to review these records and redact stuff. Anyway, the plaintiffs come back and they said, hey, the 108-day period we're asking for now is the same amount of time it took the FDA to review the responsive documents to a far more intricate task of licensing Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine. So, in other words, the Fed, the FDA has responded to much more involved requests in a much shorter period of time than 55 years.
So let me just connect a dot because this approval was the one where, if you go into the FDA website and you look at the document showing the ingredients, there's a whole bunch of ingredients that are redacted. So you're not allowed to know what's in the vaccination.
Right.
It's redacted, it's secret. And in fact, if you look at the way the redaction works, I wrote an email to the FDA and asking them, is there a way I can find these documents that the redaction refers to? And I have never yet gotten a response.
Yeah.
So we're talking about secret ingredients, and now a group of attorneys are trying to FOIA for those secret ingredients and the approval of allowing those secret ingredients to be put in our body. And the scientists are saying, we want to be able to keep it secret until after we're dead.
Yeah, That
That was your brilliant insight.
the 55 years, I mean, you tack that on to the youngest
Right.
member and they're going to be gone by the time 55 years comes and goes. So,
So I've had an opportunity to meet with a series of different researchers who I believe are very serious, and I am sure there are manufactured nanoparticles in these
I'm
injections.
sure that
So we saw
they don't want you to know
right.
what's in them. Yeah, they can't. To me, it seems like it should be like patent law. You can't have it both ways. Either you're going to tell us everything and we'll give you the exclusive rights to the patent, or you're not going to get the patent. You can choose trade secret or patent.
Right.
You can't have both. And that's what Pfizer wants here. They want it both ways. We want to keep it secret on the one hand, because it's a trade secret, we can't tell you. But on the other hand, we want approval and licensing, and we want a lot of money. And we want to be able to tell you it's totally safe, even though we're not going to not tell you what's in it.
Right, and we want the citizens to pay for it, and we want to mandate it without giving you informed consent, because you can't have informed consent if you don't know what's in it.
Exactly. You can't have it both ways. You know,
right.
So you cough up the documents, cough them up now. Hopefully the judge gets involved. The Biden administration has been on the losing end of a lot of federal cases recently, as we'll see, concerning the mandate. Hopefully this will be tacked on to a long series of losses for this just egregious administration. It's awful.
Right, but I don't think it's yet entered the consciousness, and I haven't seen it in any of these lawsuits where it is hammered home that what is in these injections are secret, and they're mandating us to inject into our bodies secret ingredients.
The Voya case makes it unequivocal. It is definitely secret.
Right.
They wouldn't be, they're litigating it because there's litigation because it's a secret.
Right, right.
In the position of the government, of all people. I mean, you know, the DOJ should be on our side saying, yeah, disclose this stuff. The DOJ is on Pfizer's side. The DOJ is a criminal enterprise.
Fauci, one of the things Kennedy's new book on Fauci makes totally clear, if you look at the financial regulatory capture and the conflicts of interest, they are off the... I mean, basically, all those agencies are paid to protect the pharmaceutical industry.
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's quite crystal clear. That comes out in his book. Well, we'll get to his book in a bit, very shortly, in fact. But in the interim, let's move on to the next story. This is from Cairns News from Queensland, which I think is Australia. I wouldn't swear to that. Army transports Aborigines to internment camps on NT chief minister's instructions. I don't know what NT is. Is that?
North Territories.
Okay. Chief minister's instructions and Prime Minister Morrison's blessing. Let me zoom in so I can read this myself. The Australian Army has begun forcibly removing residents in the Northern Territory to the Howard Springs quarantine camp. There you have a picture of that below. Located in Darwin, after nine new COVID cases were identified in the community of Binjari. The move comes after hard lockdowns were instituted in the communities of both Binjari and nearby Rockhole on Saturday night. The concentration camps have begun. In the lockdown involved, by the way, they can only leave for medical treatment in emergency or as required by law. So
if you look at the videos that the Aborigines have published on what's happening, you know, they're basically implying that they're being depopulated and moved off their land. And my guess is there's, you know, part of this is grabbing resources, but I also believe that the Aborigines have a 40 to 60,000 year old oral tradition and history, and they have phenomenal knowledge and understanding of our origins. And I think there's been a real effort over the last couple of decades to sort of destroy that, you know, that, think of this as a database deletion. They don't want that knowledge on the planet.
Wow.
They want that behind a wall of secrecy.
That's an incredible amount of time, 40,000 year old culture. That's amazing.
Right.
By itself.
Well, their history is passed on by oral tradition. And it's amazing to sit on their land and listen to them tell some of those stories. And you realize, you know, my history is very different than what I had thought.
Yeah.
It's a remarkable experience. And I just think you're seeing it all around the planet, an effort, you know. So when we went into Iraq, you know, grabbing everything in the museum and it disappears.
Yeah.
I think there's a huge effort to control history.
You see that in the U.S. with the, you know, the attack on statues, you know, just erasing history. It's very disturbing to me that Google has control of so many books. You try to track down a book, it's like, oh, it's from Google.
Right.
How long before they begin?
We started about 5 years ago telling everybody, buy hard copy.
Yeah.
Buy hard copy. Right.
Yeah. That's actually one of the reasons I make videos, is I can record stuff that happens that's been written down, you can't erase that out of the video, right? And I've seen that change. I've done videos where information in what you think is a published article changes over time. It's amazing. Anyway, keeping going on Farmageddon, the next story that I love, this one. It's about the mandates falling apart. Mandate? What mandate? This is from Alex Berenson. Hearing from people.
Who's done a great job of tracking what's going on the ground, I must admit.
Yeah.
Great coverage.
Hearing from people in multiple, he's hearing from people in multiple industries that companies have basically already given up on forcing employee vaccinations. He says, I have now heard from several people that they have either submitted requests for exemptions and heard nothing back, or been given helpful advice on how to be approved. Others have simply ignored their employers' deadlines and faced no penalties. And what's the backdrop against all of this is there's a chance that the Supreme Court will strike down the Biden rule before it ever takes effect. And that's, of course, as a result of what's happened in various courts, including most recently the Fifth Circuit, which is the notch below the Supreme Court. So with the Fifth Circuit, a court of appeals coming out and saying, hey, this doesn't, and the Fifth Circuit said that in no uncertain terms, like this is not even close to being constitutional. I think a lot of employers are stepping back and saying, hey, let's just wait until.
This mandate is forcing a lot of people to really dig in and study what's going on for the purpose of initially pushing back. But they're beginning to realize, sort of what the real governance problem is. And what's incredible, I published a letter that some brilliant person had written to Coles Department Store. It's a store in Australia. And they published a letter, demanding and holding them responsible for informed consent and their legal liabilities, everything. Whoever wrote it really knew their stuff. And about a week after the letter was published, Coles announced that they were canceling the mandate
Wow.
because I think they had really investigated what their legal liabilities were.
That seems to get people's attention, huh? Like, you could be on the hook for a lot of
Yeah.
money. That's good. That's good to know. That's really encouraging to hear about those liability notices and letters. Yeah.
If you have to write a letter to your company, check out the Coles letter. Somebody really did us a favor there.
Do you have that? So that's up at the Solari?
Just go to Slurry, do a search for Coles. It's just in the last
Is
couple of
that spelled
weeks.
the same as the American KOHL?
No, Coles,
All right,
Coles.
good to know. Okay, keep it going. Next story about myocarditis from Clever Journeys. I'm not familiar with this one. In any case, myocarditis reactions after taking experimental COVID vaccine shots are far worse than predicted. This is what caught my attention right up front. Myocarditis has a 20% mortality rate at 1 year and a 50% mortality rate at 5 years. So it is a no kidding around problem to be taken very seriously. And yet we see here, as of November 4th, there have been 12,131 myocarditis cases reported to the official, to VAERS, basically. Historically, of course, that 12,000 figure is highly unreported. Experts think the number exceeds 50,000. And then you scroll down and you see this here, it's hitting young people. 2 weeks after the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices released an advisory alerting doctors to reports of myocarditis, which was and is occurring predominantly in adolescents and young adults. That's absolutely horrifying.
Well, if you look at all the soccer players and athletes just dropping and collapsing on the field, either dead or permanently disabled, this is very much part of that phenomena. And it's frightening. There's one great, I forget what his name is, bicycle champion who's had to retire because his heart is permanently damaged, and he's been giving a lot of interviews and explaining what this means. It's shocking. I'm on a call with the Doctors for COVID Ethics once a week, and as soon as they approve the Pfizer Comirnaty, we started to get reports of hospitals receiving instructions on how to deal with young people, teenagers, who have who need blood thinners because they're clotting, and strokes.
Unbelievable.
You know, so they know. They're getting prepared.
Yeah. The amazing thing about the mountain bike champion who goes, and I forget his name too, unfortunately. I had a couple clips one week. Anyway, is that he just is giving his story. That's all he's doing is giving his testimony. Here's what happened. That's it. He's not offering it a medical opinion, just saying, here's what happened to me. And yet the guy's like, but, you know, I've had family members disown me. My friend's attacking me. It's like, peep, the brainwashing is so strong that it's like a religious cult, right, which we'll get to in a bit. The religious cult-like right. aspect of this whole vaccination campaign is not to be believed.
Right.
Not to be trifled with either. It's very serious.
I would call it hypnosis before I would call it.
It's something else. We haven't seen anything like this.
Right.
I haven't seen anything like this. So I'll speak for myself. Okay. Next up from Easton the Spectator, 13 stillborn deaths in 24 hours. This is from Canada. Rally at Lionsgate Hospital. And here you can see, let me zoom in. Lionsgate Hospital emergency entrance, North Vancouver rally with Dr. Mel Bruchet and Dr. Daniel Nagase. On average, they would see one stillborn death each month, but three doulas, which is doulas or like birth coaches, three doulas have reported that there were 13 stillborn deaths in a 24-hour period of women who had taken the experimental injection. So normally you get one a month, and now you're getting 24. You're getting 13 in one day. So people are getting together.
So, and remember, given that the injections really started in January?
Yeah.
So 9 months from January was what, September?
Yeah.
October?
Yeah.
So this would just be starting, would be logical.
Right. Yeah.
So this is something to watch out for.
Yeah, again, and hitting the very youngest this time. Their previous story was young adolescents, you know, athletes. Now it's you know, still it's babies, infants, you know, newborns.
Right. Right.
You know, and yet the pharma train just keeps struggling. Oh, nothing wrong with the vaccine. The vaccine's the way out of a disease that, frankly, if assuming it exists at all, is hardly a threat to anyone.
So you know my contention. I believe so far the injection has been successful in achieving its real goals, which have nothing to do with
right.
any virus.
Or your health.
Right. But it has to do with instituting a control grid. And it may have something to do with depopulation, we have to see.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, freeing up some capital that's trapped in very geriatric quarters, you know?
Right.
Who exactly. knows? Anyway, next story. You're all over this one. From The Defender, buy this book. Buy lots of copies. Buy. Look who it is. Catherine Austin Fitz writing a review of the new book.
So we published, and I sent it over to Mary Holland at Children's Health Defense, and she wrote back and said, can we republish? I said, sure. What happened was because I had pre-ordered six, my first one came in not last Friday, the Friday before. And you've never seen a book outside of an encyclopedia that had as many footnotes. This is a really serious book. And so I picked it up, and I thought that next Saturday morning I'll just read a few chapters. I could not put it down. I could not put it down. I spent the whole Saturday, I read all 450 pages, although I admit I skimmed the footnotes. I didn't read them carefully because there must be 100 pages of footnotes. In the foreword, he thanks he thanks almost 200 different doctors and scientists. And you can see the whole, I say in the review that even though Fauci's given away or spent almost $1 trillion since he's become director of the national, what's the proper name, NAID. If you look at the networks that Kennedy and Children's Health Defense have put together of doctors and scientists and parents who are as mad and motivated as all get out, you know, they have turned into a more powerful army in my mind, because I said they're the 21st century equivalent of a Zulu army. But Kennedy has found a way to channel all of them together. I can't imagine how many of those people fact-checked different parts of this book. And one of the things he did, which was absolutely brilliant, is he got Celia Farber to describe and help him write her description of her investigation into Fauci, both with respect to HIV, AIDS, but also drug testing he did on foster children. Now, I am told, John, under the law, if a foster child is used in a drug test, that foster child is required to have a guardian. Fauci found a way to get a hold of these kids and X the guardian requirement. And they did drug testing on these foster children in New York, and they killed scores of them. Celia Farber found the pit. They were putting their coffins in a pit covered with astroturf up in a cemetery in New York. She found it. She got it. She nailed the whole story. And the reason this book is so incredible is it absolutely makes it clear that these people are in the business of killing people.
Yeah.
They these are killers. They are using, you know, taxpayers' money to literally poison the American people and people globally, you know, because they get into some of Fauci's experiments around the world. It's, you know, this story is so ugly, I can see why people don't want to see it. But if you look at the quality of the people that Kennedy has amassed and Children's Health Defense has amassed and the attention they put into this book, it's very dense. It deals with enormous complexity, but it's very well written and I couldn't put it down.
Wow.
So
yeah, it sounds great.
You know, I ended by saying, why are we financing? Because we're paying taxes. We're funding Fauci. So, you know, Children's Health Defense is a tax deductible, is a tax exempt organization. So my last line, I said, where do you want your money to go? To finance Kennedy's litigators or Fauci's crime spree?
Yeah.
Go to Children's Health Defense and give some money.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Lower your taxes.
Yeah.
Anyway, this thing is going to go down. You know, not only should it be number one in sort of the public policy category or health category, it should be number one in the true crime category.
I'm amazed that
this is a true crime. This is a true crime thriller.
I'm amazed that Amazon's even truthfully reporting its status as number one.
I don't think they, you know, obviously if the agencies wanted to stop it, they could.
Yeah.
But I think it's too dangerous.
He's got too many people on his side.
Right. This is a formidable, I said it's also an exercise in leadership on open source intelligence. So
yeah.
I just think, you know, and Kennedy, who got thrown completely off of the corporate media in 2008, you know, he really got, and he's been attacked and attacked and attacked. I've seen them do, you know, I saw in when I was in Italy, they were trying to run the Q thing on him and accuse him of being a Q op. I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, they go after him on his family. It's really ugly what they do to him. And, you know, after watching him handle the press in Italy and Switzerland, you know, I kind of felt more inspired to be a little bit more patient because he just handles it like somebody who spent his whole life training, you know. I mean, his family is a political family,
yeah.
So he's trained,
right.
But it's brutal. It's brutal, the stuff he takes. And he just keeps going back in and he handles it. And I think that's why if you see how crowds react to them, you know, he is his father's son. He is his uncle's, you know, nephew. He, whatever that Kennedy mantle is, the crowds love him. And not because he's a Kennedy, but because he's earned it.
Yeah.
He and Children's Health Defense, it's an amazing team they have. And what they do with, you know, with very little resources is astonishing to me. Anyway, but this book is, this is going to be a classic. So get a copy of it. You know, get multiple copies and give them out because this book is a classic.
All right.
Anyway, as you can tell, I'm very enthusiastic about the book.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's amazing. I can only imagine that someone with that, the access that he has, the grief he must be getting for going after these guys and these pharmaceutical maniacs the way he's done.
So, I should tell you, your copy is winging its way to you now. It was ordered yesterday.
Oh, good. Thank you. Very good. Okay.
Okay.
All right, let's keep it going. This is a slightly more lighthearted article, only somewhat, from the COVID physician called All Hail COVID. And there's the guy who writes this, it's kind of in this first paragraph, is all about how there really are religious overtones to all of this stuff. The Church of COVID, fathered illegitimately by the financial elite and delivered from the womb. There's a Holy Trinity, Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, so on and so forth, and then winds up here in that paragraph with, it is more effective and COVID safe to believe in garlic, silver bullets, and wooden stakes than it is to believe in this vaccine. And then he gets into something very interesting here called the one last cult ward round, where he's talking to people in, you know, hospitals and their experiences with injections and what they're doing there. And he goes through, and just, I'll just have to put three here. Renal failure man, 60 years. He calls, my headset is ready. He's in the hospital. He is desperate to have the third jab. So no matter what happens to people ending up in the hospital, they want more of what got them there. Lymphoma man, 74, right. Calls. The NHS has written to him. Doctor, he asked, do I need four jabs? You know, three wasn't enough. Mr. Agonized, 81, smells a rat. He had the AstraZeneca custom clot shot twice. He survived. He is aggrieved. Why can't them give him a third time? Lucky AstraZeneca. And then you see here why he's aggrieved. He is being offered Pfizer. That's not good enough. But no matter what happens, people want more and more of that jab. Unbelievable.
So I wanted to highlight this article because it did a very good job of describing the anecdotal reports I'm getting from doctors and nurses in the United States. Now, this guy's in, I'm assuming, is in England because he's NHS. But I have doctors and nurses describing, you know, a weekly and monthly flow of people who've clearly been harmed by the vaccination. Their immune system is weakened. They're toxic. You know, so there's a poisoning going on. There's blood clotting, you know, heart problems, stroking, all these different flows of problems. And yet they cannot connect the dots, even if it started literally the day they got the injection.
Right.
They cannot connect the dots between their vaccine injury and the vaccine.
Yeah.
And the doctors keep saying to me, how can this be? What is going on?
Right.
And it puts the doctors in a terrible position because the patient wants him to heal his symptoms and heal what's and diagnose what's wrong with him. But yet he refuses. The patients completely reject a proper diagnosis and puts the doctor in a position of losing his license if he tries to really promote to them what's going on.
That's incredible. I mean, people are like...
Yeah, it's dangerous.
Yeah, my husband died 2 seconds after he got the jab. I can't wait to get mine tomorrow. But
right.
Are you listening to yourself?
Well, it's like somebody pointed out to me the children's cartoon of the gummy bears that run around and they have this magic potion elixir. And it's like the magic potion elixir.
Yeah.
And all the things that are bad are happening to you would be much worse if you hadn't had the magic potion elixir.
Right.
Anyway, it's a form of mind control. It's very, very dangerous. It's very, very serious. And this article, I thought, did a very good job of demonstrating how real it is.
Yeah, it does. It does a very effective job of that. And right. that's right. The last story we have in Pharmageddon. The next story goes into the category of disinformation, and it concerns what in my mind is one of the leading disinformation agents in the world, and that is Greta Thunberg. Sparks criminal conspiracy probe in India with accidental tweet. Whoops, what happened? Accidentally shared a message showing she was getting told what to write on Twitter about the ongoing violent farmers' revolt in India, sparking a police investigation and a political firestorm. The list she got from outsiders included a series of tips on what to post, asking her also to repost and tag other celebrities tweeting about it, including pop star Rihanna. The campaign material and social media template were created by Canada's Poetic Justice Foundation, which claims to be a grassroots group creating events to provoke, challenge, disrupt, etc. You know the drill. She gets busted out, Greta. This is after Corey Morningstar had written. Corey Morningstar ripped the mask off of Greta Thunberg a long time ago, which is like, this is a complete AstroTurf character who's backed by all this money, has all this access. No question that she's just a marketing campaign. But now you see it. That your worst suspicions about.
Well, it'd be great if somebody could, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could find a way to get disclosure of all these different campaigns and prove RICO.
Yeah.
It would be great. Yeah.
Would be. As your lawyer, I advise you not to hold your breath on that one. Okay.
I never give up, John.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Right. You never know. Okay. Moving on to FedWatch, the first story from Matt Taibbi on the Rittenhouse verdict. He says, it's only shocking if you, this is not written well. It's only shocking if you follow the last year of terrible reporting. I would write that as, it's only shocking if the only thing you followed was mainstream media reporting. If you've read anything outside of that, you know it's a bunch of nonsense. And he points to overreach by main people in mainstream media. Colleagues in national media spent a year, over a year, telling the country the 18-year-old Rittenhouse was not just guilty, but a moral monster whose acquittal would be an in-your-face affirmation of systemic white supremacy. They were out to get Rittenhouse from day one. No worry about tainting the jury, though. They just do what they're going to do. MSNBC Thursday pulled a Thornburg, referring to a movie character in real life. Police stopped a man named Jesse Morrison, who was apparently following a jury bus, and said, James Morrison said, he was acting at the direction of, you guessed it, New York-based MSNBC producer named Irene Bayan. Even if all you're after is just a post-verdict interview, if a jury gets the slightest whiff that the press is searching out their names and addresses, that's clear intimidation. So Taibbi is just pointing out how much overreach you see in the mainstream media, both in terms of poisoning the jury pool and intimidating the jury pool in an all-out campaign to get Rittenhouse convicted.
So I having spent a lot of time in litigation, not as much as you,
Well, I'm a litigator.
one of the things I developed was tremendous confidence in the design of a process that involves a jury and a decent judge. The requirement to put forth evidence and, as you described yesterday, to engage in cross-examination and for a jury to be instructed on the law and then deliberate, it slows the process down and brings us back to fact and evidence. And I've been on a jury, you haven't. That's the one claim I can
That's
make.
true.
And it's amazing when you get 12 people from different walks of life in a room how wise they can be if they've had a proper presentation of the law.
And if they have
It's
roughly
heartwarming.
equally matched advocates in an adversarial
Right.
system, the quote from the evidence expert was, cross-examination is the greatest engine for the discovery of truth ever invented. And that's certainly true. It
Right.
comes out on cross and redirect. You get to the bottom
Well,
of
it was
things.
funny watching some of the videos of the cross-examination in the testimony in the Rittenhouse trial was astonishing.
Yeah, that kind of lost me seeing some of that. It's so
Well, the
incredible.
prosecutor had to. I would love to know if the prosecutor was just incompetent or
Yeah.
somebody didn't prepare their witnesses.
Well, the witness getting the star prosecution witness getting shredded was okay. That's good. You have a good cross examiner. I know actually one of the best cross examiners in the United States. I would put him up against anybody. Witnesses get ripped apart on cross all the time. What was unbelievable to me is after the prosecution star witness goes down in flames, the defense then turns around and puts the defendant on the stand.
Why would they do that?
They're insane, or I don't know why, Catherine. I leave that to other people who are wiser than I to figure out why you see unbelievable things happening in that trial. I'm not sure. Anyway, next story in FedWatch, just about the climate. Here we go. House passes from the Journal. House passes $2 trillion social spending and climate bill. That's just gone through, and you can see what gets me about this is the language the Democratic Party is using for this. We have a Build Back Better bill in caps that is historic, transformative, and larger than anything we've ever done before, says Speaker Nancy Pelosi. There's just no effort to conceal at all the origins of this. It's like, well, we're taking our cues from the globalists. It's both, we're going to build back better. Republicans in both House and Senate have united against the bill, arguing that it would exacerbate rising inflation. Interesting that Republicans are picking up on this is a real problem in the U.S. and it's going to slow the economy's growth. People are not happy with this. And the CBO found that the bill would contribute $367 billion to the deficit over 10 years. I think that probably understates matters by quite a bit. But anyway, bill has gone through, and it's going to, inflation is now front and center in the public debate.
Right. Cori Lin, we just published, we just sponsored a great article she did on the infrastructure bill, and then she's going to turn to this one, we hope. So, if you look at the nuggets and everything they're passing, it's pretty frightening. But they are building out the smart grid.
Yeah.
And this is a control grid for both transportation, you know, the financial control grid. So taxpayers' money is being used to build out an extraordinary control grid. One of the things I hope to do next year is, if you look at, you know, you and I talked a little bit about this, there is an explosion in investment in semiconductor plants and in, you know, that industry is going gangbusters. Well, you're going to chip everything.
Yeah.
You know, they're literally putting chips in everything and automating everything. And this is going to be a technocracy run by AI and software.
It sure looks that way. And we'll get to a couple chip stories in a minute, or the manufacturer. But back to the Zero Hedge story, you saw in the headline that the bill concerned, $2 trillion bill, also has climate change in it. Zero Hedge didn't really get into that, but I'd love to see somebody kind of pick apart, like, what all is going into this green energy effort,
right?
And see that explained in greater detail. But it's coming. You know, the push for green energy, that's part and parcel of the transformation and the going direct reset, to be sure.
Part of it is the push for no energy. So in Germany is shutting down a lot of nuclear capacity at the end of the year. And all across the Netherlands, we're just getting warnings, you know, prepare for power outages, prepare for power outages, prepare for power outages. Right.
And with that, we will segue to our next story. Americans panic buying firewood and stoves amid energy crisis. And if they interview this guy from Arizona, at Firewood by Jerry in New River, Arizona, a cord of seasoned firewood, roughly 700 pieces, goes for $200 today. That's up 33% from a year ago. At another place, the price is up 11%. And at Standing Rock Farms in Stone Ridge in Hudson Valley, that's near Manhattan, the best hardwood is now fetch $475 a cord. That's up 19% from last year. And you scroll down in this article, and they speculate, not sure I buy this, but some of the increased demand Hornbeck is speaking about comes from white-collar workers moving out of metro areas to suburban or rural locations over the last 18 months or so, and they've discovered their homes are outfitted with stoves and or fireplaces. Kind of interesting, right. But no doubt energy prices are going up. People buying, they're battening down for the winter.
Right. Well, the beauty of a wood stove, if it's properly done, is you don't have to depend on a utility to provide what you need.
Right. You're just totally off the grid getting your energy supply, right?
Well, the one thing I want to say to everybody, be prepared for supply shortages and outages from here on out.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Back to the inflation theme. This is a story, a tweet gone wrong from the St. Louis Fed. You got to love this. St. Louis Fed has some advice for your Thanksgiving dinner. Eat plants, not poultry. So the St. Louis Fed tweets, at Thanksgiving dinner, a Thanksgiving dinner serving of poultry costs $1.42. A soybean-based dinner serving with the same amount of calories costs 66 cents and provides almost twice as much protein, the St. Louis Fed's Twitter account said.
Well, actually, if you look at the glyphosate in the soybean, if you add in the health costs, I think it's more expensive than the turkey.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. but let's just look what happened to this tweet when the St. Louis Fed lets this one rip. The tweet was widely unpopular given that it was ratioed, meaning there were a more significant number of replies or comments than likes. The tweet was poorly timed. It comes as some of the highest consumer prices readings in decades have been reported. Is the Fed's solution to the death knell of its, is this the Fed's solution to the death knell of its transitory inflation narrative and negative real wages? And the answer to that is probably yes, given what Powell said, that maybe we should scotch the notion of transitory. Did you see that?
Right. So now that your food is priced so high you can't afford it, we'll just have you eat cake.
Right. But
Right.
Powell is saying
Right.
most recently, and this article from Zero Hedge anticipated it, that it may be transitory. Maybe it's not so transitory, this inflation thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Moving on Fed Watch, even though this is in Switzerland, 62% of Swiss citizens vote to keep vaccine passports.
Well, that's misleading. You know, here, this is a fairly complex story. But,
yeah.
Because there are a group of us who spent a lot of time and effort trying to get a no vote instead of a yes vote.
Yeah.
It was really the way the Swiss did it. They made the ballot very confusing and the story very complicated. It was basically a referendum on the COVID laws and restrictions. And what was remarkable, the first thing that's remarkable about this is if you're a politician, John, and you want to institute a major change, you're generally taught that you need 80% or more popular support to make a major change. So the fact that they only got 62%, they didn't even get a quorum. They don't have support for major change.
Right.
But the good news on this loss was that in the 18 to 35-year-old category, 56% voted no.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So the young people absolutely rejected the COVID laws. And that's a very, very good sign. So that's number one. Number two, I think this is going to make it. Remember, Switzerland is a country where the people are very well armed.
Yeah.
So they don't have popular support for this. The Swiss government spent $100 million on trying to get this yes vote. And there are many people who believe that there was shenanigans on the count. I don't know enough to
I want to cut back to the article because there's the whiff of that in this piece.
Right.
On a show right here, they say, curiously, while voters in June backed the introduction of the measures by 60%, okay, recent months have seen many protests break out in Swiss cities over the introduction of vaccine certificates. Police in October used rubber bullets, tear gas, water cannon to disperse crowds of people who broke through barriers. So there's obviously serious resistance. And then Zero Hedge says, and yet, almost 6 months later, after this groundswell of resistance, the support for the controversial measure appears to be even higher than they were first introduced, referring to the 60,
which is impossible.
The 62% vote. Like, how did that happen? You know?
It's very baffling.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's quite, you know, Zero has words is curious that.
Right. So it's, you know, it's sad because the Swiss still remain outside of the EU and they still have a very democratic process in the cantons.
Yeah.
And a lot of cultural support for that tradition. So if they had been able to produce a no vote on this referendum, it would have been a really big deal.
It would have been huge.
But as I said to everybody, you know, this is a war and this war is going to take a long time and it's not a sprint. So,
right.
You know, be glad they, you know, we be glad they didn't get a quorum. Be glad the young people understand this is not a good idea. And let's just keep going.
Right. Yeah. Keep right. Fighting on. All right. Continuing Fed Watch. Are you ready? Five Senate Democrats reportedly opposed to Biden banking nominee.
Go Tester. Go Montana.
Okay. Here we go. Let's zoom in. Three Democratic members of the Senate Banking Committee, Tester of Montana, Warner of Virginia, and Sinema of, I think that's how you pronounce that. Not sure of
Arizona.
Arizona reportedly told panel chairman Sherrod Brown in a call on Wednesday they would not support Omarova's nomination. So that's three right there, just the banking committee. Without the backing of all Democrats, it would be nearly impossible for Omarova to get confirmed in an evenly split Senate. And yet, the White House continues to strongly support her historic nomination, a White House official told a news outlet, and they said, Sala Omarova is eminently qualified for the position. And then they say she has been treated unfairly since her nomination with unacceptable red baiting for Republicans like it's the McCarthy era. I'll tell you this. I watched the entire Senate confirmation hearing. There was a bit of grandstanding on that. I watched the whole thing. It's 2 hours and 30 minutes. That was an excellent hearing. And I talk about it in my new video. There was some really, really well done. well-framed questions and a lot of coordination between centers and following up each other's questions. It was, I give the hearing a B plus. I explain why they don't get an A in my video. But speaking of the video, are you ready for the thumbnail?
Absolutely. Take it
Are you
away.
sure?
Yeah,
Okay, so here we
I'm
have the
sure.
article. Let's cut to the thumbnail for the new video. Here it is. Sticky-fingered Fed fanatic is the wrong kind of bank boss. That is my new video. So there you have Omarova holding up a pair of shoes and a purse. That's a reference to, and there's a TJ Maxx over her left shoulder in the background. The arrest record from 1995, which I go into, she steals four pairs of shoes, admits to it, two bottles of cologne, pair of socks, and two belts, and conceals them all inside of a purse, probably a purse somewhat larger than the
Wow.
one you see there. But in any event, that's what that thumbnail is a reference to.
Okay, well, we're definitely looking forward to that. As soon as we have it, we'll put it in the subscriber links on Money and
Yeah, good
Markets.
deal. Okay.
I appreciate you doing that, John. I think that's going to be a very popular one.
Yeah, well, we'll see. That there was some grandstanding in that hearing. People saying, "Oh, I don't know whether you call you a professor or call you comrade." And there was a little bit of that in the hearing, but they went into the merits of her paper quite a bit. Her most recent paper, The People's Ledger, and to characterize this as just a partisan attack is absolutely ridiculous. When you just saw that three members, Democratic members of the banking committee from rural areas, have reservations and well-founded ones about Omarova.
So let me tie her paper to what's going on. What we're seeing with either COVID-19, the new variant, or power outages, these are all ways of shutting down economic activity that lower inflation. So if, we just we have a chart coming up later, German producer price index skyrockets to 18%. So what do? You shut down economic activity to cool down. So your monetary inflation is, and printing money and giving it to the private equity firms, et cetera, that's causing monetary inflation, but you can offset that by shutting down different parts of the economy, particularly the ones you want to pick up cheap. So there, whether it's using health as an excuse or power as an excuse or supply shortages, they're constantly trying to engineer deflation. And what the Vanderbilt Law Review article that she wrote proposes is if the Fed is having trouble ramping down inflation, instead of bothering with all these different ops, you just shut down their bank
You
account.
just debit their bank account. So let's move $18 trillion of retail bank accounts at commercial banks right now, move them all onto the Fed's balance sheet. And once they're there, you can just debit people's accounts if the inflation becomes a
Right.
problem.
There you go. Right.
Oh, really?
Right.
And then, oh, by the way, that's on the
Right.
liability side. On the asset side, do you know what she proposes? Hey, I got a good idea. Instead of just having the Fed monitor the markets, let's have the Fed be able to go into the markets and go long on securities and short securities. Wouldn't that be wonderful? So they can help out their crony buddies in advance.
Well, here's what's interesting, because the New York Fed is already doing that with the Exchange Stabilization Fund, but they're doing it on the U.S. government balance sheet. The reason you'd want to do it on the Fed's balance sheet is if you're going to collapse the U.S. government.
And you'll be beyond the
So
reach of FOIA requests if you do it
that's
in
true.
the
They are now. They are the Exchange Stabilization Fund through the New York Fed is beyond FOIA.
Yeah, it's a little different though because it's the Treasury.
Right.
It's still a part of the government, whereas the New York Fed can say, "Hey, we're privately owned. Go pound sand." FOIA doesn't apply at all.
Did I tell you what they did to GATA? The GATA guys tried to FOIA the Exchange Stabilization Fund because of the gold manipulation. And the Treasury, it was the Treasury, the New York Fed wrote back and said, we have no records on the Exchange Stability Fund. And the guy from GATA called me and he said, oh, well, they have nothing. I read it and I said, no, they don't have nothing. This is a trick. This is what they do when they don't want to give you anything. You have to write back and say, no, I wasn't asking about the Exchange Stability Fund. I was asking about the Exchange Stabilization Fund. And he said, they would never do that. And I said, of course they would. That's how they do it.
Please, Gomer Pyle, go
Right.
Get an education in trickery. Of course they do that. That's the first thing they
Yeah, of
do. You
course.
know, get the name wrong and
Yeah.
tell you, hey, we don't have anything response to your request. Anyway, let's turn to CBDC real quick and crypto. Very interesting story here for a couple reasons. This is from the Bank of England. Under the Western Sky, the
Right.
Crypto Frontier speech by Carolyn A. Wilkins. As I say, it's interesting for a couple reasons, one of which is, let me zoom in here. Thank you. This is the text of her speech. Thank you for the warm introduction and invitation. It is a great tradition for the Quebec authorities and financiers to have an annual rendezvous with industry. What, pray tell, is the Bank of England doing in Quebec? She's here to speak about crypto assets and the ecosystem of financial services that it is developing around these assets. So the first interesting thing is she's in Canada. The second thing
Right.
is this here. This is kind of, you got to kind of read between the lines here. Crypto assets are the bedrock of the emerging financial ecosystem. So supporting consumer protection and financial soundness is the first order of business for regulators. In this regard, there are important differences between crypto assets that are backed and those that are not. In my opinion, what that refers to is I believe that the powers that be, central bankers, are going to get into crypto, and they're going to get in through stablecoin, through stablecoins as a way, because
Right.
stablecoins function as a settlement currency in the crypto space.
Right.
And so if they
Right.
could control the stablecoins are fundamental to the on-ramp and off-on-ramp into the crypto universe. And that saying that some assets aren't backed, that's an indirect reference to Tether, which is the main, it's a big time stablecoin, and Tether is pretty well known not to be backed. I think probably the powers that be are coming for Tether, and they're probably going
Right.
to take it down. And to me, that telegraphs where the central bankers are headed with respect to at least stablecoins in the crypto ecosystem.
You know, what you're saying makes sense because they need to make sure whatever they do, it addresses one, the settlement issues, but also the lower the transaction fees for the emerging markets issues. And that stablecoins have the potential, first and foremost, to do that. So
Yeah.
I think you're right.
I think they're coming for Tether. I think that what they'll try to do is probably try to slide in and take the place of, they'll try to use a Fed coin or some CBDC to put it into place and use it as a settlement currency with cryptos. Because remember, the powers that be are excellent. They're masters at finding the choke point in a system, the weakest point, and taking
Right.
control of that. You know, Howard Hughes didn't make his
Right.
money by patenting everything in the diamond universe. He just patented the drill bits. No drill bits, no diamonds, right? Yeah.
Right.
So they're good at
Right.
choke points. They're very good at playing that game. In any case, let's move on to global turf wars. And our first story there is from Russia. This is Putin lashes out at Western powers for taking Russia's red lines too lightly. And what is he talking about? The Russian leader warned NATO against expanding cooperation with Ukraine, but NATO countries continue to do so. This week, the UK signed a new navy deal with Kiev to build warships for Russia's neighbor. Putin is not happy about this. The US and NATO have stepped up military activity in the Black Sea, which Moscow views as a major provocation. Putin described this activity as going beyond boundaries and said a Western strategic bomber recently flew within 20 kilometers of Russian borders. You get the flavor here. Putin not happy with what the US and the West is doing around.
Well, they keep moving in and squeezing and
Yeah.
squeezing and
Yeah.
squeezing. So, and the thing that concerns me here is it doesn't take but a stupid accident to set off some kind of major mess.
Yeah, right.
Right.
I mean, I don't think it'll escalate into anything, but
I don't think so either, but it's.
Putin's not happy with what's going on anyway. Okay, next story. This is an interesting story. This also touches on how young people sometimes have a different opinion than older people. This is from when China came calling inside the Solomon Islands switch. The Pacific nation's decision to sever ties with Taiwan reverberated around the world and has had far-reaching consequences inside the country. So the Solomon Islands has had a long standing relationship with Taiwan that basically just got jettisoned when Manasa Sogavare, the prime minister of the Solomon Islands, announced Honiara would end its 36-year relationship with Taiwan and officially recognize Beijing. Sogavare received a warm welcome in Beijing, and to get this, returning to the Solomons having signed 5 memoranda of understanding, including an agreement for China's Belt and Road Initiative, and having secured a promise from China to build a multi-million dollar stadium in the country. Chinese companies were also granted the right to build infrastructure, roads, bridges, and power in order to revive Gold Ridge, once Solomon Island's most lucrative gold mine. So basically, he went over there and cut a deal that was favorable to with China to his island. And a lot of people are not happy with the exit from of Taiwan, a friend which stuck with Solomon Islands even during the Civil War. But here, the interview guy says the new generation, they don't want China. They want Taiwan.
Right.
So they don't like what their leaders are doing, the young people. They're not happy about that, which I found interesting in the story.
You know, I'm probably over-affected by my time in Hong Kong, but everywhere you go, the young people do not want China.
Yeah.
They do not want China.
Right.
They do not. Right.
So what do you think is behind that?
Because they don't want totalitarianism. They don't want social credit control. They don't want, you know, the Chinese... When I can't tell you how much Hong Kong was changed by the building of the bridge to China, and the, you know, the steady encroachment of the Chinese. You know, you're talking about much more tight financial control, and a hyper materialism and sort of a nihilistic culture. It's the only way I can describe it.
But why would young people pick up on that and yet older people not pick up on it?
Probably because young people aren't signing and getting the contracts.
Yeah, maybe. Right.
In other words, you got people who are trying to, you know, who are getting huge kickbacks on these deals and contracts, and they're selling. You know, we've seen this for decades. I've seen this for my whole life. The older people make money from selling the neighborhood down the river, and the people in the neighborhood don't get the kickbacks, and, you know, they just get being sold down the river.
Yeah, and that gets to the theme, which we haven't talked about for this week, which is, did young people just push the red button, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what I saw in Switzerland is the young people are pushing the red button, and that's good, John, because... You know, if you think in long-term increments, because if you're a young person, you got your whole future ahead of you. If you think in long-term increments, you got to be pushing the red button as hard and fast right now as you possibly can.
Yeah. It's game time for sure.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Continuing on with global turf wars. This is interesting. We alluded to earlier, Samsung to choose Taylor, Texas for $17 billion chip-making factory. Let me zoom in on this. The Taylor, Texas facility, located in Central Texas, plans to create around 1,800 jobs. Interesting number. That's about, in other words, $1 million they're spending per job in that plant, on just the plant. Though chip production is not expected to start until the end of 2024. Wow. According to documents Samsung had previously filed with Texas authorities. To woo Samsung, the town had offered incentives that include the equivalent of property tax breaks of up to 92.5% for the first 10 years, with the write-offs gradually declining over the next several decades. So obviously, Taylor, Texas sees more value in that than just the tax receipts, having Taiwan come in with splash in with semiconductor.
Well, that's Samsung, that's
sorry,
Korea.
Yeah.
But Taiwan, semiconductor, Intel, and Samsung are pouring hundreds of billions of dollars into new manufacturing capability. You know, and one of the questions I have, because I think, you know, if you look at what the demand for chips from the smart grid, you know, you're talking about chipping everything. And my only question is, if you look at the pictures of the manufactured nanoparticles that are clearly highly engineered, you know, so the Japanese found tiny stainless steel particles. You know, who's making that? And one of my questions is, are the chip manufacturers also making those?
Good, great question.
Because after all, if I'm right, it's all part of the smart grid,
Great
right?
question.
They're injecting their smart grid particles into your body. So, you know, who's manufacturing
I
that
got it. You
and
know,
where
I
is
see
it
that number,
manufactured?
$18 billion on a plant. That's just an astronomical figure for a building,
Right.
right?
Right.
I mean, like it's 1,800 workers, $17 billion. I mean, like I said, it's $1 million a head.
So, you know, I've done a survey where I did a cost estimation on all the underground bases. You know, this is just a completely wild ass guess. I don't have the expertise to do it properly. But one of the things I will tell you is the cost of building a plant is many, many multiples if you have to keep everything secret.
Yeah.
So a plant that would cost $1 billion that has to be, you know, manufacture in secret, keep everything secret, you know, be designed so that nobody can see in it in secret, you know, that could raise the price many, many multiples.
Yeah, for sure. Or there's a technology that's going on and being manufactured in that plant that's not just your bread and butter microprocessors, EEPROMs, and you know, chips, garden variety chips.
Right.
Right, that something super sophisticated is being manufactured in that plant to cost $18 billion. Like, what kind of equipment is going into that plant?
Right.
I don't know. Anyway.
Well, this is one of the reasons we see these huge bills coming through the Congress with trillions of dollars being thrown at this stuff. Take a look at Corey Lynn's new article. It's up at Salary.com and also at Corey
Okay.
Diggs. And she just goes, you know, because I said to her, we've got. In the old days, I would have read, you know, the detail on all this legislation and budgets because all the nuggets are buried. And so I said to Corey, could you go through the infrastructure bill? And she's done it. She needs to go through the new spending bill.
Wow.
But you know, if you just look at what she's dug up, you'll see what I mean.
Yeah.
This is automating the transportation networks and automating a huge amount of the infrastructure.
Yeah, something's going on. Anyway, let's keep it going. Next story is interesting for a couple reasons. Wall Street Journal, U.S. joins with China, other nations in tapping oil reserves. They point out early on in this piece, gasoline prices up 61% from a year ago. And they say here, the U.S. and five other countries, including China, will tap their national strategic petroleum reserves in an attempt to bring down gasoline prices that have become a sore spot with motorists and a big contributor to inflation, the White House said. That's interesting how quickly we abandon the green agenda when people start complaining about prices.
Yeah, so I don't buy the
I don't
excuse.
either.
Energy is the number one cost of manufacturing in the United States. And if you look at the spike in prices, you know, it was going to wreak havoc with corporate profits.
Yeah. Analysts are kind of underwhelmed by this, say limited effect. But I want to look at the numbers here. This is the other interesting part to me about the story. The Biden administration said in total it would put 50 million barrels of oil from U.S. government stockpiles onto world markets in the coming weeks. Okay, sounds like a lot, right? Nope. In total, 65 to 70 million barrels from government stockpiles. That figure, 65 to 70, is only a little more than half of the world's daily consumption. So you're tapping into your reserves, yes, but it's a drop. It's literally a drop in the bucket. It's a half a day.
Well, except for this, who's getting the 50 million barrels?
Okay, but it's half a day for the world. Yeah, you're right. If it's going to one tiny.
Yeah, but if you have, so I don't know where it's going. If they say they're dumping it into markets, then it's tiny. But if you've got 10 major corporations who are helping produce your vaccines and the prices are spiking and causing, you know, problems with their contracts with you, and you channel it right to them. It's a very different story.
Yeah, but you know, I don't know. Why would the White House say they're dumping it on? They're putting it into the markets. Anyway, it's a tiny amount they're talking about. like they're tapping in, wow, they're tapping in these reserves. It's almost like
It's not a tiny amount. It's not a tiny amount if you're channeling it to selective campaign contributors.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But there was no suggestion in that article that that was going on.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah, well, then it couldn't have been happening.
Well, I'm saying they're saying we're putting it out onto the market. In other words, why is there a headline?
Right, but you can put it out on the market and have deals with your market makers to channel it
Why
back.
make a headline out of it at all?
That's a good question.
Right. In other words, it looks like
Right.
PR. Like, hey, we're tapping into oil
Right.
reserves. We're doing everything we can to bring down oil prices.
Right.
You know,
Right.
so who knows? Next
Right.
story, you'll know a lot more about this than I do. Interesting. This is sort of an ongoing feature of money markets,
This
recurring.
is
The
huge.
U.S. Department of Defense invites four cloud firms to seek contracts for JEDI replacement system. We've covered this story before, the battle between Microsoft and Amazon after canceling its contentious.
And Microsoft had been awarded the
Right.
contract. Microsoft had been invited to onboard. Microsoft had won. Now, what this is saying is they're going to rebid the whole thing, which means Microsoft now loses
Right.
and has to rebid.
Right.
And interestingly enough, the CEO of Microsoft, the same week this happened, sold 50% of his stock.
Oh, right. If we didn't have that, we don't have that story queued up this week.
Right. The Wall Street Journal tried to imply that it was an increase in capital gains by the state of Washington, capital gains tax. But to me, it looks
Yeah,
like,
okay.
yeah.
Anyway, there's a
So
big shakeup here.
the reason this is so important, one of the best things that's happened to us is that Microsoft got booted out and they're rebidding. And the reason why is once this contract locks into place, John, you will have the cloud contracts and other IT contracts in place to re-engineer a significant amount of the federal government just through the cash flows and the websites.
Yeah.
So the speed at which government re-engineering can occur as soon as this locks into place is astonishing. So
Yeah.
the longer it gets delayed, the more technocracy is delayed.
Yeah, good point. But
Right.
that's been an ongoing story on Money and Markets, like the battle between Amazon and Microsoft. You know,
Right.
Amazon stopped that. Basically, now it's being spread around. They've expanded, gone from a monopoly to a small oligarchy. Or oligopoly, you
Right.
know? All
Right.
right. I believe this is the first story in Pushback. Yeah, here we go. It is the first story in Pushback. Huge exclusive. Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano calls on people of faith to unite in worldwide anti-globalist alliance to free humanity from the totalitarian regime. There's a video with it that we're not going to play. But if you go down, Vigano has been on Money Markets before too himself. He really speaks our language, though. He says the anti-globalist alliance will have to bring together the nations that intend to escape the infernal yoke of tyranny. And he goes on and complains about he denouncing the crimes of the elite, complaining of this excessive power and of corruption, and saying, listen, we got to get together with and form an alliance. Anti-globalist alliance, Catholics, Christians, and people of goodwill need to get together and push back with all their might against these evil globalist
Yep.
forces. Wow.
Yep.
I
Mark Skidmore did a great summary of how bad things were in so many countries with the mandates and COVID laws. And you could tell he was in a real funk about it. And he got to the end and he said, we need divine intervention.
Yeah. There you go. Well,
Right.
Vigano is the guy
There you
to
go.
spearhead that effort, right?
Absolutely. He's done a great
And the
job.
guy's language, though, for a man of the cloth, he just pulls no punches with these people,
Right.
these criminals. He lets
Right.
them have it.
Right.
It's just like, well,
Right.
this guy's a believer. I mean, he is a
Yeah, he's a Christian.
true believer.
He's a
Right.
Christian. Yeah, he's a real
Right.
Christian. Yeah.
Onward Christian soldiers. They talked about Vigano, man. Holy cow. Okay, next big one in Pushback. Round two, we have RFK's book, The Real Anthony Fauci, number one on Amazon bestseller list. It's a serious pushback here, right?
So I was driving to the Burn event with Bobby, and I said to him, because they had all asked, the Children's Health Defense people had all asked us to buy five pre-order copies at Amazon. And I said,
That's.
and I did it. I went to Amazon and I did something I never do, which is, or I try never to do, which is buy something from Amazon. And I said to him, only for you would I buy 5 books at Amazon.
Yeah, no kidding. Right.
Yeah. Well, here's what's amazing. So when I got the one book that I'd ordered from ABC bookstore in Amsterdam, when that came in, I checked my order at Amazon and it was gone.
Huh.
It was gone. There was no order. I was like, how could that be? I can't find it. I don't know. I got to go look for it some more.
Yeah. Anyway.
It's a little strange.
Yeah, I can't wait to read my copy. Be looking forward to that.
It's on the way. I didn't buy it at Amazon.
Ah, good deal. Okay. Continuing on, this is some serious pushback in India. World's first vaccine murder case against Bill Gates and Poonawalla filed in India's high court. And basically, the gist of the gravamen of the complaint, petitioner has sought prosecution of AstraZeneca's manufacturer Bill Gates, his partner Poonawalla, and other government officials and leaders involved in the murder of a 23-year-old man. So there's your victim, who lost his life because of vaccination. The deceased took the Covishield vaccine by believing in the, so there's two parts to this, by one, believing in the false narrative that the vaccine is completely safe, and two, also owing to the compliance requirement set by the railways that only double vaccinated people would be allowed to travel. And that's really the sum total of the case, is murder case.
So I think it's time to start calling it murder and killing and genocide. So I was very glad to see this, because it's, you know, the time has come when we have to hold people accountable, and what they're doing is murder.
I mean, I want to cut back to this real quick. This is not some, you know, spontaneous guys talking junk at the bar. I mean, this is the India Bar Association, right?
And right.
This is, I mean, that's some serious pushback, and presumably a pretty, you know, well-organized group of people, of attorneys.
Right. Well, they've had, you know, they've had terrible experiences with some of Bill Gates's vaccination programs in India. So they're well versed in what Gates is up to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And closer to home, some more pushback. This is good news, too. Biden administration in full retreat. Federal vaccine mandate is now suspended due to, quote, onslaught of legal challenges. And we begin here, the OSHA, Occupational Safe and Health Administration, announced that it was suspending the federal vaccine mandate's enforcement. So straight at the federal government saying, we're not doing it. Suspending all implementation and enforcement efforts related to the emergency temporary standards on mandatory COVID vaccination. This is, you know, so here you get to the, what's going on. Follows the November 12th, 2021 order from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, staying enforcement of the ETS pending a final ruling on that. And I think farther down, you could see here what really got to him was this. The appeals court's language is strikingly adamant that the mandate does not even come close to passing constitutional muster. And
ain't that the truth?
Yeah, and more and more courts are picking up on this. There's another story. I just want to cut to it real quick, not officially on our list. Biden jab mandate for health workers blocked nationwide. So this is another case, not just the Fifth Circuit. A federal judge blocked Biden COVID-19 shot mandate for healthcare workers nationwide. The New York Post has reported.
Now, was this third district? Where was this?
Well, it's New York, so it would be Second Circuit, but it's a district court.
Second Circuit, okay.
Yeah, Second Circuit, but it's not the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. It's a district court. U.S. District Judge Terry Doughty issued a preliminary injunction for workers across the country one day after another judge stopped the mandate in 10 states. So the injunction across the country, and the judge says, this is really the key, this is the key here. This matter will ultimately be decided by a higher court than this one, he wrote. However, it is important to preserve the status quo in this case. So in other words, you can't reverse the damage done once people are vaccinated. And so the liberty interests of the unvaccinated requires nothing less, you know. So this might get reversed. It's a preliminary injunction where you're just.
So go back, because it says that Daugherty was appointed to the Western District of Louisiana Court. Is he also in the Fifth
District?
No.
So this would be Western District of Louisiana by Trump, the judge. So it's, you know, I don't, I'm not really sure where this is coming from now.
Daugherty was the one
Where?
mentioned in the top, so they're referring to.
Yeah, it's the New York Post reported it, but it's not out in New York. That's the deal. So
Okay, so it's out of it is out of the
it
Fifth
is out of it
District.
is out of the Fifth Circuit. But
So
it's
the appeals court in the Fifth Circuit did the first one, and then this guy's is a district court, and he did the second one.
yeah, right. But it's all healthcare workers, right?
Right.
So and
But his is he's saying
it's
countrywide.
nationwide. So it's
Because he's a federal judge,
well,
and he can't he has
so
jur
is the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals federal.
But they both have jurisdiction nationwide.
I think that the district court here has jurisdiction over healthcare workers via some healthcare agency that would apply nationwide, whereas the Fifth Circuit, it's a regional issue whether the constitutional meets and bounds are met. That applies only in that regional circuit,
Right,
right? What's
right.
bootstrapping the district court to a nationwide basis is that they have some federal agency in there, and you have people coming and complaining, saying, "Hey, I work for such and such a federal agency.
Right.
Strike this down." Judge went with them. You know,
That's great.
yeah, it's amazing pushback. And you're seeing more and more of it. There's some state courses, state cases that were decided in the last 2 weeks too, where more and more judges are getting on board, saying, "You know, I think that Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, that's a pretty prestigious
Right.
institution. You know, that's a notch below
How,
Supreme
John,
Court."
how much are they affected by the quality of the written opinion?
Who?
The other judges, say somebody looking at what the Fifth District did. I mean, the Court of Appeals in
Yeah,
the Fifth
the Fifth
District.
Circuit.
How much are they impacted? Sorry, Fifth Circuit. How much are they impacted by the quality of the written opinion?
I don't think that much. I think it's really sort of the language, number one, like the coming out so strongly saying this is not even close to the constitutional muster. And two, what's really driving it to me is it's a court of appeals. It's a federal court of appeals. You
Right.
don't get there. I mean, the next,
It's three
it's
judges.
a three-judge
Right.
panel, but it's the level of it. It's the notch below the Supreme Court. This isn't some rogue judge in a district. There's only like
Right.
850 members of the federal judiciary, the vast majority of whom are at the district court level. The appeals court, you have 12 regional circuits, and you have two, I think, two or three of subject matter jurisdiction circuits. So it's only 15 courts nationwide, whereas with district courts, you have 50 states, and then a lot of the states, you know, Illinois, North Carolina, New York, they have three districts. A lot of them. Delaware only has one, but
Right.
you get.
And to take the opposite position, you have to make a persuasive case that they were wrong.
Yeah.
That gets hard to do. Right.
Anyway, the judicial resistance to the mandate is picking up steam,
Growing. It's picking
is
up
what I'm
steam.
seeing.
Okay.
The Fifth
Right.
Circuit kind of broke the dam, I think, by coming out that strongly against the mandate. People that opened some eyes, I think. That's my read on it for now, you know.
Well, millions of people thought they could wiggle around this until that employee mandate, and suddenly it brought everybody into the war.
Yeah, right. So, you know, this is like you say, it's long term. It is a war. It's battle by battle. But this is the news from the court level, from the courts is certainly has been good recently for us.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I agree.
Okay. I think we are now ready for charts.
So I want to say a couple of things, though, before we move on. I want to make a correction because I keep referring to the former head of Manitoba in Canada was the guy who talked about, I want to thank the people who sent the
Ah,
rain.
yeah.
And I said it was Alberta. And a whole batch of wonderful Canadian subscribers have made sure I was corrected and I had the right name and the right Manitoba instead of Alberta. It was very funny. The second thing, I just talked to a wonderful ally in Australia. They just finished having protests. They estimate more than 1 million people came out across all of Australia. It's only 24 million people in Australia. 1 million coming out in
That's
protest. They said it was amazing.
wow.
Yeah, the pushback in Australia is, they've finally got their vigorish up and the fight's on. And I think harming the Indigenous people, you have no idea how upsetting that is to the Australians. It's like the last straw. The other thing I wanted to mention, I mentioned that our holiday greeting is up, and I would really encourage everybody to go read it. But one of the donations, we have donations under rule of law, donations under health, donations under food. As I said, a very generous subscriber made it possible for us to do quite a Santa Claus thing at Christmas. But the last donation is we are offering for any subscriber who has suffered from vaccine injury or from vaccine death or related depression. We have offered for the first 50 exercising, the option to do this, we have offered to send them a copy of the Wim Hof Method. And so if that describes you, if you've had a terrible experience with COVID-19, the vaccination, we just got somebody who was terribly harmed by the test. So we just sent out our first one as of yesterday. And just to make sure you understood what we were talking about, when I sent you Fauci, I also sent you the Wim Hof Method, John.
Okay, thank you.
So again, if you are suffering from vaccine injury or related death or depression, absolutely. If you want to just go to support at the website, just click on support and tell us your situation, and we will send you a copy of the Wim Hof Method for the first 15 people who 50 people who exercise this. So a couple more announcements. Okay, so charts.
Charts.
Let's
Let's hit it.
dive in. And the story is inflation.
No particular order here, sort of randomly.
Okay.
First chart, here you go.
Yeah, I just wanted to take a look at how the dollar and the Swiss franc were trading. Around the referendum. And what you can see is, many other things are going on at the same time, but the financial system is
The
feeling,
referendum is roughly here.
it was November 28th.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe.
So it looks to me like they decided what was going to happen the previous Friday.
Yeah, it kind of does.
It's what,
Yeah.
yeah, it does. It's funny because if you look, for example, when Trump won, his victory started to be traded, a couple days. I don't know, it was in late October. Anyway, but many other things going on, but clearly the Swiss currency sort of strengthening after the
For
referendum
sure. Yeah.
is what happened.
All right. Moving on. Next chart. USD. Oops, sorry about that. Let me go back. USDX, moving average. DXY.
Yeah, so US dollar, there's another US dollar chart in there, I'm
Yeah, there
hoping.
is. I think so.
Yeah, this was just the one below
Okay.
it. So let's just look at
Let's
the
keep. Okay, this is West Texas.
no, this is W yeah, this is West Texas oil. So as you can tell, the price is getting it was getting very pricey.
Right.
And if you run an energy dependent manufacturing capability, this could really it depends on what you're using it for, but this could be,
Yeah,
the Navy's budget was getting
so
pinched.
this is, roughly $85, and you can see.
Well, look at where we were in January.
Yeah, right. Well, in January it
Right.
was
And it's putting,
45,
make
but
no mistake about it, it's putting a lot of money into Russia's pockets.
yeah, the run up in oil. So you got to wonder
Right.
what did this,
Right.
I don't know. Okay, moving on. We have note. Here we go. And this is three things.
Yeah, so I just wanted to take a look since the going direct reset was voted on, how the S&P has traded against Europe and China. And one of the things you see is China's really come down in 2021. So, the S&P clearly outperforming Europe. And what was interesting is before the going direct reset, just sort of at the end of 2019, I remember various advisors saying to me, okay, well, the U.S. outperformance is over. We're starting to sort of migrate more money into Europe and the emerging markets. And then, boom, you know, the Fed goes into the repo market. The rest is history. And, of course, once again, the U.S. markets outperform.
Yep.
What a coincidence. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Natural gas, boy.
Just because we showed the oil price, I just wanted to take a look at natural gas. You start off the year, you know, America's made big, big bets on natural gas. And so this is expensive. You start the year, you know, between $2 and $3, and then you spike up to over $6.
Right.
That's a big price explosion for the manufacturing industry.
That's huge. Incredible. Okay.
Especially coming in a winter, if it kept spiking.
Yeah.
You know, if you kept spiking, you know what that's going to do to heating prices?
Ooh. Yeah, again, but just like oil, like what's doing this, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, somebody got worried about that.
Yep, somebody did. Okay, this next chart is from Germany, Producer Price Index.
Yeah, this was one that was just tweeted out. And, you know, all you have to do is look at a chart like that, and I could have told you there'd be a new variant.
Yeah, let me kind of try to zoom in there. Yeah, so you can see that the producer price index in Germany, I mean, it's not quite at 20, but it's getting close, 20%. Yeah, you're right. You see, I've said that too in a recent video. It's like, you know, they might need, you know, with this inflation running away, they might need a new variant or some new crisis.
Right.
You know. Anyway.
Right. Right. That's why they love sticky fingers, because sticky fingers is going to give them the ultimate tool to shut down any inflation.
Yeah. She's on board.
Right.
Migrating those accounts to the Fed where you can just freeze them up. Okay. And then our favorite here, week after week, but notice something different this week. Mr. VIX. Normally in the basement.
I don't remember seeing the VIX out of the red zone.
No, I don't either. That's
right.
You know, it's been a long time since VIX. I mean, the rest of it is pretty.
Right.
It seems like we look at the same chart every week.
So what they're saying is maybe the Fed put isn't everything it's always been.
Something's going on. I mean, the other thing about this is, you know, precious metals getting crushed. Not a surprise. But the VIX.
No, but crypto. Well, what it says is crypto's doing a great job.
Yeah, crypto's doing a great job. Yeah. But the energy, you know, no surprises up here. Energy, stuff you need, oats, corn, you know, all the good stuff. That's just up through the roof. But the VIX, man, what is that? That's a, I don't know. Something wicked this way comes, maybe.
Right. Well, do you have the interest rates? Because that'll show you.
I don't think I do, Catherine.
Okay. Justin sent it, but basically if you look at the Treasury chart of the long-term rates.
Yeah, he had them, but the problem was it was a thin column, which doesn't do well on a monitor.
Ah, okay. Well, you know, interest rates are starting to sneak up, and you can tell they're fighting with rising interest rates. And we saw, you know, we've seen headlines that there's real sort of cracks in the Treasury bond market. And of course, this is, you know, there are two places we're going to see the real tension and creaking in the system. One is in the long-term bond, and then the related derivatives markets, and the other is in taxation.
Yeah.
Because if you are intentionally and overtly using government money to kill children, parents are not going to be enthusiastic about paying taxes.
No, they are not. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So do you feel like paying Fauci and the FDA to kill your children?
Right. Right.
Right. So we're going to see a lot of tension in both of those places, and it's something to keep an eye on and think about. You know, as you look at where your money is flowing in government, particularly locally, are you financing schools that are harming your children? What are we going to do about it? We have a lot to say about
that.
Yeah,
and as far as interest rates are concerned, I don't see those going anywhere. But what do I know?
So I see them steadily sneaking up and then being pushed down. Yeah. But the financial repression that you need to push them down, just like inflation, because it's part of the same story. You know, my concern is not that interest rates are going to skyrocket. My concern is that financial repression is going to have to skyrocket to keep them
very
down.
Very well put. Right. Yeah, very good insight there. Right. I totally agree with that. Now that it's been pointed out to me.
Okay, well, I'm going to miss you next week.
Yep.
But it's Wednesday. The first thing I'm going to do on Thursday night is I'm going to make some popcorn. I'm going to get a great bottle of carbonated water, and I'm going to watch Sticky Fingers.
Yep. Yeah. So I'll have that out. I'm going to try. I've got to pack up my stuff. Get into my car so I can get on the road tomorrow. While I'm doing the edit today, hopefully I can get it out tonight. But if not, I think it's more likely that I'll put this video out at the same time Money Markets is coming on Solaris. So it'll be probably Thursday evening. So
okay, can I have your permission to use the thumbnail in our Money and Market short today?
Yeah. I'll
okay.
I'll email it to you. So you have the,
okay. Okay,
the
great
version. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
John Titus, it's always a pleasure. I look forward to talking to you in 2 weeks.
Likewise, Catherine. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.